Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dear viewers, this is the third episode of the 19th topic. We began discussing the collection of the Quran in the light of the Quran two episodes ago, and we had seen how certain verses of Surah Qiyamah, in the view of Imam Hamiduddin Farahi, a distinguished scholar of the subcontinent, tell us the scheme of the collection and revelation of the Quran. And we had also seen how these verses of Surah Qiyamah have been interpreted by our traditional scholars. And in my personal humble opinion, I find the view of Imam Farahi to be very convincing. The view actually tells us that the Quran would be revealed in a very piecemeal manner, the way it is being revealed. The Prophet should not be impatient and anxious on this piecemeal revelation. At the end of this revelation, when the whole of the Quran would be revealed, the Almighty will have these installments collected in a unified whole, and then not only that, he will read out the Quran in its new sequence, and then the Prophet would be obligated to follow this new sequence and abandon the previous one. And during this time, if any of the verses would require any explanation, that would be furnished by the Almighty as well. So if this is what the Quran has told us about its history, as I said in the previous episode, that this is something of a very big nature, because Quran in itself has delineated its scheme of collection. And contrary to the very many narratives which we have already studied and critically evaluated in a number of previous episodes, we find that the stance of the Quran is entirely different in this regard, if I may be allowed to say that. Now, we had stopped in the previous episode at the point when we had concluded that if Farahi's view is correct, that the Quran had been collected in a unified whole at the end of its revelation, and this unified whole was then recited out by the Prophet to his companions, who then transferred it to the rest of the Ummah later on, then of course there is one question that needs to be addressed, although this question is not related entirely or directly to the interpretation, but to some historical details of this interpretation. So I would like to present before you some details which would tell us that how was the Quran found amongst Muslims when the Prophet left us for his heavenly abode. So what was the shape of the Quran at the Prophet's demise is our topic, or our main thrust that we will discuss today, because this part has not been entirely pointed out by the Quran. The Quran only tells us that the installments that have been revealed shall be brought together. Now, in which medium or in what shape shall they be brought about is something which we'll have to look up into history. So I am now going to present before you some data which tells us that how the Quran was found by the end of the Prophet's life. But before we do that, or in order to reach that conclusion, we must also need to know how the Quran was found in the living tradition of the Muslims during the lifetime of the Prophet. So we will discuss how the Quran was read out, heard, listened, written, memorized, and taught. So these are some of the ways in which the Quran was found in the living tradition of the Muslims. And we shall see how the Prophet himself and his companions would go about reading and reciting and learning and teaching and memorizing the Quran during this whole era. And this will lead us to the conclusion as to how the Quran existed when the Prophet died. So as far as Prophet's living relationship with the Quran is concerned, which is the first thing I'd like to point out, because this is how the Quran actually originated from the Prophet himself. He had a very vibrant relationship with the Quran. He would read the Quran, he would recite the Quran, he would hear the Quran, he would teach the Quran. And also, we had seen in the previous episode how he would recite the Quran, or various surahs of the Quran, complete surahs of the Quran, in the prayers. And we had seen various narratives in which he would read various surahs in the prayer. So I'm not going to repeat those narratives, but I'm going to now present some more data in this regard, which would tell us about the Prophet's living relationship with the Quran. The first thing that I'd like to present here would be that the Prophet would be very diligent in listening to other people reading the Quran. And in this regard, I'd like to present before you a narrative from Imam Bukhari's Al-Jami' al-Sahih, and it is reported by Ibn Mas'ud. He says that once the prophet asked him to read out the Quran to him. So he recited Surah Nisa, and when he reached the 41st verse, the prophet's eyes became tearful. Another narrative from Imam Bukhari's As-Jami Sahih says that the prophet praised Abu Musa al-Ashri for his melodious voice in reciting the Quran. So these are just a couple of examples of how the prophet would relish in listening to other people reciting the Quran out to him. And then I'm going to bring some data before you viewers, which tells us how the prophet would respond to the Quran when he himself would read it, or when he would actually hear others read the Quran. Thus, we have a narrative from Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal's Musnad, which says that Abdullah ibn Umar says that while teaching them the Quran, the Prophet would pass by a verse of prostration. He would prostrate, and they would also prostrate with them. So, and he would also prostrate with him. So, whenever a verse of prostration, we know there are verses in prostration found in the Quran. Whenever there's a directive from the Almighty, or an incident which tells us that believers prostrate before the Quran, or the sun and the moon prostrate before the Quran, or some number of similar verses, we would find that the Prophet would prostrate. And this is how he would respond to these verses of prostration. Then Abu Darda, this is a narrative from Ibn Majah's Sunan. So Abu Darda reports that they only offered prostrations at 11 places in the Quran, and none among the Mufassil surahs. And these were in surahs Araf, Ra'd, Nahl, Bani Israel, Maryam, Hajj, Furqan, Naml, Sajda, Swad, and a prostration in the Hawamim. So these are the surahs in which it is reported that the Prophet would respond by actually offering prostrations. And then we have another narrative from Imam Bukhari's Al-Jami al-Sahih. It says that Zayd ibn Sabit says that he read Surah Najm to the Prophet, and he did not offer the prostration in it. So again, this is something of a description. But again, the point that I'm trying to make is that he would relish being heard, to listen to the Quran, and he would ask his companions to read out the Quran to him. Another narrative from the Musnad Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal, Abu Huraira says that he offered the prostration with the Prophet in Surah Inshiqaq and Surah Iqra. So this is how he would respond in this way. Then there is another category or set of narratives in which the reaction to the Quranic recital is depicted. The Prophet recited out the Quran both to the believers and disbelievers, and the Quran itself is replete with words which ask the Prophet to read out the Quran to his adversaries. It tells him to read out the Quran to them. And there are so many occasions in this regard that I don't even need to name them, because I'm sure all students of the Quran very well know how the Quran has asked the Prophet by the command of Kul, recite it out, tell them, read out. And at many a times this means that you should read yourself and read out what you are being told to others as well. So we have a number of verses in this regard. Furthermore, the Quran says that true believers are those whose hearts are filled with awe at the mention of God, and whose faith grows stronger as they listen to His revelations. This is Surah Anfal, verse 2. And when they hear His revelations, they fall down on their knees in tears and adoration. This is found in Surah Maryam, verse 58. So the Quran also depicts the reaction of the disbelievers when they would hear the Quran. They would say that it's a tale of ancients. This is mentioned in a number of places, for example, in Surah Anfal, verse 31, Surah Qalam, verse 16. And they would ask that a different Quran be brought down to them, or that the existing one be changed. This is also a demand that the disbelievers would make, and mentioned in Surah Yunus, verse 15. Their faces would reflect anger, and they would almost pounce on the believers. Another verse in Surah 22, verse 72, Surah Muminun, Surah Hajj actually, verse 72. And similarly, they would regard the Quran as sorcery, and so on and so forth. So these are some of the allegations which they would make on the Quran. Of course, after listening to it, they wanted to disparage it and demean it in front of their followers so that they would not be impressed by it. So these are some of the examples in which we can see there was a reaction. When people would read out the Quran, a positive reaction on the part of the believers and a negative one on the part of the disbelievers. Again, this shows how the Quran pervaded in the society of Arabia in those days. It was being talked about, it was discussed amongst people, and people would actually make schemes so that especially the disbelievers, so that if there is any impact of the Quran on their followers, it is diminished. So viewers, now let us move on to another set of narratives which I'm now going to present before you, which tell us how the Quran was taught by the Prophet and by the companions. So we have narratives to the effect, which for example, we have a narrative in Imam Bukhari's Al-Jami' Sahih, reported by Usman ibn Affan. It says, the best among Muslims are those who learn and teach the Quran. We have Abdullah ibn Awfa, who says, Abdullah ibn Awfa said that the Prophet urged people to adopt the book of God after him. Again, this is from Bukhari al-Jami' al-Sahih. And then we have a narrative from Imam Muslim al-Jami' al-Sahih. Ibn Abbas says that the Prophet would teach them the tashahud the way he would teach them a surah of the Quran. So not only does this depict the importance of the tashahud, but also the fact that the Prophet would be very diligent in teaching the companions a surah of the Quran. Ali says that the Prophet would teach them the Quran at all times, except when he was ceremonially unclean, when he was in Janaba. So this has been recorded by Imam Tirmizi in his Sunan. Then Abdullah ibn Umar says that once a person came to the Prophet and asked him to recite a portion of the Quran to him. The Prophet asked him to recite any three surahs from the Alif, Lam, Ra category. The Alif, Lam, Ra surahs, viewers, are Surah Yunus, Surah Hud, Surah Yusuf, Surah Ibrahim, and Surah Hijr, because they begin with these words, Alif, Lam, Ra. So the Prophet asked him to recite any three surahs from the Alif, Lam, Ra category. When he expressed his inability to read such long surahs, the Prophet asked him to read only three from the Hamim category. The Hamim surahs, viewers, are Surah Mu'min, Surah Hamim Sajda, Surah Zukhruf, Surah Dukhan, Surah Jasiya, and Surah Aqab. These are surahs which begin by the words Hamim. So they are called the Hamim. So the Prophet asked him to read any three from the Hamim category. And when he again expressed his inability to read these surahs, the Prophet then asked him to read any three from the Musabbihat. And the Musabbihat surahs are, viewers, surahs which begin with Sabbaha, Yusabbihu, and they are Surah Hadid, Surah Hashr, Surah Saf, Surah Jumrah, and Surah Taghabun. So once again, that person expressed his inability. Later, that person was happy to learn just Surah Zilzal, a very short surah of the Quran. So again, you can see how the Prophet was very, very concerned in teaching or having people learn various surahs of the Quran, and how he would give relief to people who would express the inability to read or learn the longer ones. Then, viewers, we have a narrative from the Al-Jami' al-Sahih of Imam Bukhari. This is reported by Abdullah ibn Umar. So Abdullah ibn Umar says that he heard the Prophet say that the Quran should be learned from four people. And then those four people are named: Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, Salim, Mawla of Abu Huzaifa, Ubay ibn Ka'b, and Mu'az ibn Jabal. So these are the four people whom actually the Prophet singled out, that these are very exceptional teachers of the Quran. And so therefore, if people want to learn the Quran, they are the people they should go after, they should seek. So another narrative is recorded by Imam Ahmad in his Musnad. He says that Abdullah ibn Amr reports that the Prophet said that he who read the Quran in less than 3 days did not understand what he read. So again, we find the Prophet actually emphasizing upon people to read the Quran slowly, reflecting on what the meanings are, so that it is absorbed in one's soul. And again, this shows us the diligence and vigilance of the Prophet regarding the teaching of the Quran to his companions. So then there's another narrative in the Musnad of Imam Ibn Hanbal with him, and that is, once the Prophet corrected Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, who read Hal Mim Muzakir. So we know this is a verse of Surah Qamar. So Ibn Mas'ud actually read it as Hal Mim Muzakir. And the Prophet said that it was Hal Mim Muddakir. So instead of Hal Mim Muzakir, it is Hal Mim Muddakir, which is how the Prophet corrected his companions. Again, which shows that the Prophet would not only teach the Quran, but he would also listen to his companions, so that if there is any error, it should be corrected. So all this data again shows how the teaching of the Quran formed a very integral part of the Arabian society in particular, in general, and amongst Muslims in particular. So then we have another narrative from An-Nisa'i Sunan al-Kubra, and this time by none other than by the Prophet's famous companion, Umar ibn al-Khattab. So Umar reports that the Prophet said that he who wants to read the Quran in the way it was recited to him should read it the way Ibn Masud reads it. So actually he has actually told people that Ibn Masud is someone whose recital should be followed because of the way most probably he would be reading in a very correct way and in a very correct accent. The Prophet sent Abu Musa and Muaz to Yemen and asked them to teach the people to teach the Quran to people. This has been recorded by Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal in his Musnad. So this is again shows how the Prophet would send people to various areas so that they could teach the Quran in those areas to the people. And then we have another one, again from Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal's Musnad. It says that Ubadah ibn Samit reports that when a person would migrate to the Prophet, he would entrust him to one of the companions who would teach him the Quran. So the Prophet would actually consign that person to one of his companions, and his primary job would be to teach the Quran to that person. Then there is another narrative which says that Usman ibn Abil As was among the delegation of the Saqif, and it came to the Prophet to accept Islam. He was the youngest, and the Prophet taught him the Quran. He spent time with Ubay, who taught him the Quran. Later, when the delegation returned, he was made its leader by the Prophet. He would lead them in the prayer and also teach them the Quran. And this has been recorded by Ibn Sa'd in his Tabaqat al-Kubra. So this again shows how the Prophet would rely and specially encourage the younger generation in this regard. We have another narrative from Ibn Sa'd's At-Tabaqat al-Kubra. Farwa ibn Musayyik ibn al-Haris would often attend the gatherings of the Prophet and learn the Quran and obligations and injunctions of Islam. So this is again another example of how people would be enthusiastic in learning the Quran. Then we have another narrative again from Ibn Sa'd's Tabaqat al-Kubra. The Prophet left behind Muaz ibn Jabal in Mecca when he left for the campaign of Hunayn so that Muaz would teach them the Quran. So he specially left behind Muaz ibn Jabal, a very famous reciter of the Quran, a very brilliant teacher of the Quran. In instances when he had to go out for a battle, the Prophet would be very careful and very sensitive to the needs of the people in learning the Quran. He left one of his famous teachers in the Battle of Hunayn in Mecca, so that he could teach people the Quran, and there should not be any gap in this teaching. In Medina, this again has been recorded by Ibn Sa'd in his At-Tabaqat al-Kubra. So in Medina, the house of Makhrama ibn Nawfal was called the house of Quran memorizers. It was called a Dar al-Qurra. It was here that Ibn Maktum, the blind, resided. So this was especially a place of the memorizers of the Quran. It was called a Darul Qurra, and here, of course, we can see that it would be a place where the reciters or the memorizers of the Quran would reside or gather to discuss or mutually revise the Quran. And then we have Ibn Hajar in his Al-Isaba pointing out the fact that according to Al-Waqidi, the Prophet entrusted Wardan, an ancestor of Al-Furat ibn Yazid, to Sayyid ibn Aban ibn Al-As so that he could teach him the Quran. It is evident from a report by Abu Sayyid Al-Khudri that the companions would sit around a person who would read out the Quran to them. In one such instance, the Prophet came over to such a gathering and praised them for this noble act. So we can see how the companions would sit around a person who would read out the Quran to them. And when the Prophet came to know of such a gathering, he was very pleased to see how the Sahaba or the companions were discussing and revising the Quran. This has been mentioned by Abu Dawud in his Sunan. Amongst the members of the delegation from the Banu Hunifa who came to the Prophet to embrace Islam was Rahal ibn Anfawa, to whom Ubay ibn Ka'b would teach the Quran. Again, recorded by Ibn Sa'd in Tabaqat al-Kubra. And then we have Abdullah ibn Auf al-Ashhaj, was a member of the delegation of Rabi'a Abdul Qais, which came over to the Prophet after the conquest of Mecca to embrace Islam. It is recorded by Ibn Sa'd that he would ask questions from the Prophet about the Quran. Again, which shows us that primarily it was the Quran that would form the basis of conversion, and people would ask questions about the Quran from the Prophet. This has also been recorded by Ibn Sa'd in his At-Tabaqat. And when Abu Harab ibn Khawalid Ibn Amir ibn Uqayl came to the Prophet, he recited the Quran before him and presented Islam to him. Again, see, it tells us how the Prophet would take lead in actually presenting the Quran before people who would like to know about Islam. This has also been recorded by Ibn Sa'd in the Tabaqat al-Kubra. The Prophet once recited out the Quran to a Christian delegation that came from Najran, again recorded by Ibn Sa'd. So this is how the Prophet would actually present the message of Islam. In the 10th year of Hijrah, 15 people from Ar-Rahawiyyin, a sub-tribe of the Mudahij tribe, came over to the Prophet. They embraced Islam and learned the Quran, again recorded by Ibn Sa'd. When the tribes of Adl and Al-Qara embraced Islam, the Prophet sent six of his companions to inculcate in them a deep understanding of religion and to teach them the Quran. Again, this has been recorded by Ibn Abdul Barr in his Al-Isti'ab. So this is how we see the Prophet sending teachers, and in fact we can see six of them being sent, because when the tribes would embrace Islam, they would need more people to teach them the Quran. In the 10th year of Hijrah, when a delegation of Banu Haris in Najran came over to the Prophet and embraced Islam, the Prophet sent Amr ibn Hazm with them to teach them the Quran, recorded by Tabari in his Tariq. So this is how the Prophet would send a person, or in this particular case, sent a person so that he could teach them the Quran. Then we have Ibn Abdul Barr in his Al-Istiyab recording the fact that the Prophet sent Mu'az ibn Jabal as a judge to one area of Yemen to teach them the Quran and the directives of Islam. Abu Rafa' al-Adhawi learned the whole of Surah Baqarah from the Prophet. This is recorded by Ibn Abi Shayba. Then we have Abdullah ibn Abbas saying that he had learned the muhkam surahs of the Quran in the time of the Prophet, again recorded by Ibn Abi Shayba in his Musannaf. At the behest of the Prophet, Abdullah ibn Masud taught whatever Quran he knew to Muaz. Both would often go to the Prophet before whom Muaz would recite the Quran. And Muaz was one of the teachers of the Quran in the times of the Prophet. So at the behest of the Prophet, Abdullah ibn Masud taught whatever Quran he knew to Muaz. So Muaz would be taught the Quran by Abdullah ibn Masud, and both of them would go to the Prophet, before whom Muaz would actually recite what the Quran that he had learned from Abdullah ibn Masud. This has been recorded by Ibn Abi Shayba in his Musannaf. Now, before migration, the Prophet sent Mus'ab ibn Umair and Ibn Umm Maktum to teach the Quran to the people of Medina. Again, before migration, he had sent two of his very famous reciters and memorizers of the Quran who went to Medina before the Prophet himself went, so that the Quran could be taught to those people in Medina. And this has been recorded by Ibn Sa'd in his Tabaqat al-Kubra. And then we have the Prophet once read the Quran before Abu Bakr, who embraced Islam. So this is Ibn Ishaq in his Sirah Nabawiyyah actually telling us the story of how Abu Bakr himself embraced Islam. It was because the Prophet had read out the Quran to him. And then we have Ibn Ishaq also recording in his Sirah Nabawiyyah that the Prophet presented Islam and read out the Quran before Az-Zubair ibn al-Awwam, Usman ibn Affan, Talha ibn Ubaidillah, Sa'ad ibn Abi Waqqas, and Abdul Rahman ibn Auf. He read the Quran to all of them. Previously, I just read out a report which tells us that he read the Quran before Abu Bakr. So all of them, when they heard the Quran, they accepted Islam. Abu Ubaidah ibn al-Haris, Abu Salama ibn al-Asad, Abdullah ibn al-Arqam, and Usman ibn Maz'un visited the Prophet. He presented Islam before them and read out the Quran to them. At this, they embraced Islam. So we see how people embraced Islam at the hands of the Prophet simply when they heard him reading the Quran, and how powerful the Quran's message must have been. We have the Prophet recited the Quran before a delegation of Christians which had come over from Ethiopia, as a result of which all of them embraced Islam. Again recorded by Ibn Ishaq in his Sirah Nabawiyyah. The first person to openly communicate the Quran in Mecca from the mouth of the Prophet was Abdullah ibn Masud, again recorded by Ibn Ishaq in his Sirah Nabawiyyah. We have Khabbab ibn al-Arth Ibn Ishaq saying that Khabbab ibn al-Arth taught the Quran to Umar's sister Fatima and to her husband, Sayyid ibn Zayd. Abul Walid Utbah ibn Rabiya once came over to the Prophet and offered him various things in return for giving up his mission. The Prophet responded by reciting the initial verses of Surah Hamim Mustajda. So instead of responding to him in any other way, the Prophet actually just read out the verses, some verses of Surah Hamim al-Sajda. This has been recorded by Ibn Ishaq in his Sirah al-Nabawiyyah. Then we have Ayas ibn Mu'az, Ibn Ishaq saying that Ayas ibn Mu'az accepted Islam at the hands of the Prophet when he read out the Quran to him. This has been recorded by actually Ibn Hisham, not Ibn Ishaq. Ibn Hisham is a Sirah al-Nabawiyyah. The students of the companions too taught the Quran. It is narrated that amongst Ibn Mas'ud's companions who taught the Quran were Al-Kama, Al-Aswad, Abida, Masruq, Amr ibn Shurahbil, and Haris ibn Qais. So these are the companions or the students of the companions who themselves would teach the Quran, and this has been recorded by Ibn Abi Shayba in his Musannaf. And another narrative from Ibn Abi Shayba in his Musannaf says that Abu Abdul Rahman al-Sulami taught the Quran for 40 years. We all know that he was a famous student, or he was a famous Tabi'i, and he actually taught the Quran in a mosque in Kufa for 40 years. So viewers, this is a small glimpse of how the Quran was being taught in the Arab society, not only by the Prophet, but by his companions as well. And now I'm going to present some more data which shows us how people were very diligent in memorizing the Quran. And although we know that people have taken up the task of counting how many memorizers were there in the times of the Prophet, but obviously this is a task which one can say from one's own common sense that it cannot be. One can never have a record of the number of people who actually had learned the Quran. Rough estimates can be made, but neither has history reported all the memorizers, nor can a person enlist all these memorizers. He can only enlist those memorizers which came to his notice or to his knowledge. So we know that there were several memorizers of the Quran, and this we shall also take up when we discuss the next topic, how the Quran was actually taken by the companions, learned by the companions, and then transferred to the next generation. But the obvious incentive for learning the Quran was there, and the Prophet encouraged his companions and his other followers to learn the Quran and transmit it. So we have a special category of people called the Huffaz or the Qurra, who were repositories of the complete Quran. And the Prophet actually, we know that there are a number of narratives which actually give incentives of great reward in the hereafter. And of course, this would have encouraged and given impetus to the memorization of the Quran. So Abdullah ibn Umar reports that he heard the Prophet say, "One can be envious of two persons only, a person who has been bestowed the Quran by the Almighty and he reads it at night, and a person who has been blessed with wealth by the Almighty and he spends it in the way of Allah morning and evening." Again, this is a coveted thing, that someone who has learned the Quran. "The more a person had the Quran committed to memory, the more he was deemed desirable to lead Muslims in the prayer." Of course, this is a fact. So Abu Masood al-Ansari reports that the Prophet said, "People who know the Book of God more should be made imams." This has been recorded by Imam Muslim, as Jami say. So to be appointed a prayer leader was something of a very coveted nature. And this would only be enjoyed by those persons, or this position would be held by those persons who knew more of the Quran. "The Prophet told his companions that a memorizer needs to constantly revise the text, for a lapse in this regard would make him forget the Quran. Abdullah reports from the Prophet, 'Keep revising the Quran, for it will vanish from your heart sooner than a camel which is set loose.'" So this has been recorded by Imam Muslim in his Jami' al-Sahih. Aisha reports that a person who is fluent in reading the Quran will be with noble and honorable scribes, and he who reads the Quran with difficulty will receive a double reward. And this has been recorded by Abu Dawud in his Sunan. Bara' ibn Azib reports that the Prophet asked Muslims to decorate the Quran with their voices. And this has been recorded again by Abu Dawud in his Sunan. And then we have Abu Saur at-Tamimi. He said that I had memorized the Quran in the time of the Prophet. This has been recorded by Umar ibn Shabba in his Al-Akhbar al-Madina. Now, viewers, I can present more narratives in this regard as well, but I shall leave it so that just to present a few samples before you was my purpose in telling or communicating to you how the Quran was memorized and cherished by the companions, because the Prophet himself gave this incentive of how high a position memorizer of the Quran would hold on the day of judgment. So this actually made many people take up the task of learning the Quran. And needless to say, the Quran itself has such rhythm and beat that memorizing the Quran itself is a very easy task if a person goes about it. And this structure and construction and this rhythm of the Quran has contributed a lot in people memorizing the Quran in a very short time. So now, viewers, I'm going to take up another topic or another section which tells us how the Quran, besides being memorized, was also consigned to in the form of a written document. So that we find writing the Quran as something which is also present in the time of the Prophet. So the Quran already, we know, had made this distinction while telling about itself that it was something which was taught by the qalam or by the pen. So we have Surah Iqra, in which the verses are Iqra wa rabbuka al-akram allazi allama bil qalam. Read out to them, and the fact is that your Lord is the most bounteous who taught this Quran by the pen. Actually, the context tells us that the Surah Iqra bismi rabbika allazi khalaq actually refers to the fact that the Prophet is being told to read out the Quran before people in the name of his Lord, and the fact is that the Quran has been taught by the qalam, allama bil qalam, which tells us that it was written. Of course, we find it being referred to by a number of verses as a written document. When, for example, the disbelievers would say, "Waqalu asatirul awwalin iktatabaha fahiya tumla alayhi bukratan wa asila," and they say, "Fables of the ancients he has had written. They are written and taught to him morning and evening." Narratives show that the Prophet would call for his companions when a revelation would come down to him. And similarly, we find that he would actually call people who would live near his house specifically, or even if they are not near about, he would call them so that revelations could be written down. Now, viewers, before I give some examples in this regard, let me also present before you the fact that people, our historians, have gone about recording the number of scribes of revelation as well. And thus, for example, Yaqubi in his history has given a whole list of scribes. And then we have Dr. Ramyar saying that there exists a difference of opinion in the number of scribes of revelation. Ibn Asakir in his Tariq Medina at Dimashq mentions 23, while Abu Shamma, summarizing this book, lists 25. Ibn Abdul Barr in his Al-Istiyab mentions 25. And we have Zanjani, who mentions 43. And this is a summary which has actually been made by Dr. Mahmoud Ramyar. And the most recent addition in this regard is Muhammad Mustafa Azmi's book, who has actually written a book called Kuttabun Nabi, which means the scribes of the Prophet. Of course, this means that it's not just the scribes who had written the Quran. He has made a general list of these scribes. Viewers can look up these manuals and these books, but the fact is that in this regard, it may be noted that these scribes, none of them were officially appointed by the Prophet as a scribe. He would just ask them to write down the Quran as if a teacher would ask a student to come over and take dictation from him. So I shall presently say something more about it, but for the moment, let me just present before you some narratives which tell us how the Prophet would make this arrangement of asking people to come over and then write down the Quran, and even he would hear out what they had written so that any correction could be made. So let me present before you a narrative from Imam Bukhari al-Jami' al-Sahih, and this has been reported by Bara ibn Azib. So he says, عن براء قال لما نزلت لا يستوي القاعدون من المؤمنين والمجاهدون في سبيل الله قال النبي ادعوا لي زيدا وليجيء باللوح والدوات والكتف بالكتف والدوات ثم قال اكتب لا يستوي القاعدون وخلف ظهر النبي عمرو بن ام مكتوم الاعمى قال يا رسول الله فما تأمرني فاني رجل زرير البصر فنزلت مكانها لا يستوي القاعدون من المؤمنين والمجاهدون في سبيل الله غير أولي الضرر. So Baras says, when the verse, "those among the believers who sat and did not go for jihad and those who fought in the way of God are not equal," was revealed, the Prophet said, "call for Zaid." So this is how he would ask his companions to come forth and write down what had been revealed. So the prophet said, call for Zed and let him bring tablets and shoulder bones in the ink pot or shoulder bones in the ink pot. He then said, Zed, write down. La yastavil qa'iduna min al-mu'mineen. Again, the same verse. Standing right behind the prophet's back was Amr ibn Umm Maktum, the blind. He said, O prophet, what is your directive about me, for I am a blind? At this, the following verse was revealed, actually. Some more words, which says, وَالْمُجَاهِدُونَ لَا يَسْتَوِ الْقَاعِدُونَ مِنْ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ وَالْمُجَاهِدُونَ غَيْرَ أُولِ الدَّرَرِ, which means that those among the believers who are not handicapped and who sat and did not go for jihad, and those who fought in the way of God are not equal. Again, a question asked by Ibn Umm Maktum and being answered here. This has been recorded, viewers, in the in Jami Sahih of Imam Bukhari. And then, similarly, viewers, we have another narrative from which is recorded by At-Tabarani and Mujam al-Kabir. It says that Zayd ibn Sabit said, actually, first, let me just read out the Arabic. So it is reported, and Zayd ibn Sabit qal, كنت أكتب الوحي لرسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم وكان إذا نزل عليه أخذته برحاء شديدة وعرقا أرقا شديدا مثل الجمان ثم سري عنه فكنت أدخل عليه بقطعة الكتب أو كسرة فأكتب وهو يملي علي فما أفرغ حتى تكاد رجلي تنكسر من ثقل القرآن حتى أقول لا أمشي على رجلي أبدا فإذا فرغت قال اقرأه فإن كان فيه سكت أقامه ثم أخرج به إلى الناس ثم أخرج به إلى الناس. Zayd ibn Sabit said, actually the words are summa akhraju bihi ilan nas. Zayd ibn Sabit said, I used to write down the revelations in the presence of the Messenger of God. When a revelation would descend, he would be in great distress and would profusely sweat as if pearls were scattered. Then when the revelations would end, I would come over to him with a piece of with a portion of saddlewood. Then I would write and he would dictate to me. As soon as this would finish, I would feel that my legs were going to break with the weight of the Quran, and I would say to myself that I would never be able to walk on my legs. When I would finish, he or the messenger would say, read it out to me. Then if there would be any mistake, he would correct it, and then I would take it to people. So this shows how the prophet was not only very concerned in having the Quran written, but he would hear out what was written so that if in case of any error, it could be corrected. And this, of course, shows how he was, how diligent he was, or how sensitive he was, that there should not be any mistake in what had been written. We also find, viewers, the companions writing the Quran in the presence of the Prophet. Thus we have a narrative in Imam Baqiyah Sunan, which says, it is reported by Zayd ibn Sabit, it says, and Zayd ibn Sabit, رضي الله تعالى عنه, قال, كنا حول رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم نؤلف القرآن. So Zayd ibn Sabit said, we would compile the Quran in the presence of the Prophet. We would compile the Quran in the presence of the Prophet. And this narrative is actually from the Mustadrak of Al-Hakim. And then we see how the companions themselves would copy out the Quran. Again, this is a detail that I'd like to present before you and found in Al-Bayqi's Asrar al-Kubra. It says, and recorded by Ibn Abbas, that An Ibn Abbas qal kanat al-masayif la tuba'. كان الرجل يأتي بورقة عند النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم فيقوم الرجل فيحتسب فيكتب ثم يقوم آخر فيكتب حتى يفرغ من المصحف. Ibn Abbas said, Masayif in this time were not sold. So they were not sold, they were written down. A person would come with his pages in the presence of the Prophet. Another person would stand up and write on his pages without charging him. Then another would stand up and write, and this continued till the Mus'haf had been written. This shows how viewers, the Prophet, out of companions, were diligent in copying out the Quran and making their own copies for themselves so that it could be read. Thus, viewers, we can see that from this data, I can present even some more data in this regard, but I'll content myself to the one I have presented in order to give you some idea of how the Quran was actually read out, heard, written, memorized, and taught in the living tradition of the Muslims in accordance with the responsibility. We know that the Prophet was told by the Almighty, "Utluma wuhiya ilayka min al-kitab," they recite out what is revealed to you from the Book of God. And then we have, "Ya ayyuhar Rasul, balligh ma unzila ilayka min Rabbik," which means that it is essential that the Prophet must communicate whatever has been revealed to him by his Lord. So this was basically yours, an overview of how the Quran existed in the living tradition of the Muslims. And from here, viewers, we can make a deduction of the fact that if we want to find out how the Quran existed in the times of the Prophet, then we can say that it existed in the living tradition of the Muslims in two mediums. It was found in the memories of people, and it was found in written form as well. However, viewers, what one can exactly surmise is the fact that the Prophet did not leave behind any official record of revelations, whether in the form of scattered revelations or in the form of a unified book. He never did that. This is absolutely evident. This is clear. And he also did not single out any official repository of the Quran in the form of a companion telling us that this is a person from whom you can precisely take the Quran, which I leave behind. No, he never did that. So he did not leave any officially compiled mushaf or codex behind him. He actually had transferred the Quran that he acquired from Gabriel to the living tradition of the Muslims. He had it written down to his companions. He had it dictated to his companions, and he taught it to his companions, and he also asked them to memorize it and to read it and to teach it. So it was found in the living tradition of the Muslims. And it is not proper, as some people have claimed, that he actually had the Quran written down in the form of a book. We find, for example, people like Imam Khuy and even Tamanna Imadi telling us that the word kitab, which has been used by the Quran at a number of places for itself, tells us that it must be in the form of a written book. I am afraid this is against usage. The word al-kitab can be linguistically spoken for a written book, for a book which is found in the memory, for a book which is found in a computer, for a book which is found in any virtual medium, for example, in a PDF or a Kindle or on the internet. So this is how a book can be called. It's not necessary that a book has to be there in printed form or written form before us to be called a book. A book can exist in one's memory. It can exist in any medium as long as it refers to a unified whole. So I would not go along by them as well. And we also know, viewers, that there are some scholars like, for example, and I would point out some classical scholars in this regard, like Al-Khattabi and Al-Zarkashi, who say that the Quran had not been written down in the form of a book for some reasons. And they give out those reasons. And one of the reasons is that there was a chance that revelation would come right till the Prophet's own death. So he never got the chance to have it assembled in the form of a book. And this is a pretext that they present, both Imam Khattabi and Zarkashi, that since there was a chance that the revelation could come till right up to his death. My personal take in this regard is that perhaps this too is stretching too far, because there are at least two clear incidents in the life of the Prophet which tell us that the Quran was complete well before his death. And had he wanted to compile it in the form of a codex or a written mushaf, he had ample chance to do so, but he never did so. Thus, we know that in the last Ramadan of his life, when he had revised the Quran with Gabriel twice, signifying the fact, or in all probability, that the Quran had been completed, we know that that happened in the last Ramadan, and he lived for 5 more months after that. But he never initiated a task of compiling in the form of a book. Similarly, we know in the last Hajj, after which again he lived for 3 months, he had actually said that he was leaving down the book. He was leaving behind the book of God to his people, and the words are that if they adhere to it, لَن تَدِلُّ أَبَدًا, they would never go astray, which again tell us that he was leaving behind him the complete Quran. And if they held on to it, if they adopted it in their lives, they would not go astray. And he again lived after the last sermon for 3 months. So these two incidents, to my mind, tell us that the Quran was complete well before his death. And had the prophet actually intended to compile it in the form of a book or a codex, he had enough time to do so, or at least he could have initiated the task, but he never did so. So I think it was intentional. And in this regard, the methodology that he adopted was that instead of compiling a single codex, and of course this could have created a lot of problems as well, and the major problem, of course, would be that in those times, writing was dependent on the oral tradition. So even if he had written a codex, he would have needed someone orally to read the written codex, because we know that diacritical marks were sparingly used, and for any written text, especially like the Quran, a memorizer was a must who would actually read the Quran properly. So there could have been other reasons as well, but I am pretty sure that the Quran, the way the Prophet communicated it to his to the rest of the Ummah, was that he actually had people write it down so that they could write it and learn it, of course, from the memorizers. And he had actually, as I said, from the data I just presented, that he had presented the Quran to the living tradition of the Muslims, and from there onwards it was transferred to the rest of the generations. And in the last topic, before we end this topic, I have something more to say in the next episode, vis-a-vis some of the collection episodes which have been mentioned in these narratives. But once we do that, the final topic of of this whole series would actually then focus on how this collected Quran was transferred to the next generations. So I would end my talk here, and before we move on to the next topic, as I said, I will introduce some of the questions which do arise on this account of the Prophet, especially if we take up Hadith narratives, although I have answered those questions in detail when I was discussing the Ahadith, the respective Ahadith, which mention various episodes of the collection of the Quran, but I'm just going to briefly answer my response to those narratives and evaluate those narratives in a nutshell way, and people who'd like to look them up in more detail can see the actual talks. But for those who would like to skip those talks and just want to know how I have criticized those narratives, the next episode, inshallah, will deal with them. Until then, أَقُولُ قَوْلِي هَذَا وَاسْتَغْفِرُ اللَّهَ لِي وَلَكُمْ وَلِسَائِرِ الْمُسْلِمِينَ وَالْمُسْلِمَاتِ